Hello and thanks for listening to this latest edition of the Activate Doors podcast. I'm John Davidson and I've been out on the bike with bikepacking guru Marcus Stitz recently in the Cairngorms National Park. We went for a ride from Aviemore, looping round to Rhyvonbothy and close to Nethy Bridge and then back on the Speyside Way. So along the way we recorded this little podcast. Hope you enjoy it. With Marcus today out on the trails above Rhyvonbothy, heading into the Abernethy Reserve. Hi Marcus, how are you getting on?
Yeah, really, really well. Enjoying the sunshine.
It's a beautiful day, isn't it? So, this route's taken us from, we started off in Aviemore. We've come up the old logging way and past Rhyvonbothy now.
Yeah.
So where do we head kind of once we get down to Forest Lodge?
So we head into the forest here and then basically, work our way back from there to Aviemore, yeah. So past Nethy Bridge, and then, so it's past Loch, what's it called? Loch Garten?
Yeah.
And then, kind of some nice Caledonian pine forest.
Yeah. So tell us a bit about the book of gravel rides in Cairngorms and Perthshire, isn't it? You've kind of combined into one book.
I guess the idea came from, so I've come up to this region quite often. I've moved to Scotland 16 years ago, and then from 2019 onwards, spent quite a lot of time in Aileff, in the southern, or close to the southern Cairngorms National Park.
And
I guess in a way this book is different from the other books I've done, because I deliberately wanted to have something which has routes you can do in a day's time. So for people who want to have a nice day on the bike. So it's not necessarily bikepacking as a lot of the other stuff I've done.
Yeah. Some more day rides and that sort of thing.
Yeah. And it's also, I think, like over the last years, I've been developing routes. And I think you get a good feeling for what people are looking for in routes. And I just wanted to have a nice mix of easy routes, of some challenging stuff, because I think there's people out there who want to have like a big day on the bike.
Mm-hmm.
And likewise, also some stuff, like, I mean, most of the routes in the books, it's somewhere in between.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess what's the same with all the other books. So there's a couple of core principles. It's trying to get as many routes close to public transport as possible, wherever that's possible.
Yeah.
So people can enjoy those routes if they don't necessarily own a car or need to have a car.
Hmm.
And the other thing is also, I guess, trying to find a nice mix between stuff which is well known, but also taking people into corners of the Cairngorms and Perthshire, which are more of the beaten track, which I always think for cycling is actually, for me personally, more enjoyable.
Mm-hmm.
Because you kind of get basically the same, the whole place for yourself. I mean, this route we are on here is, I would put it into the more popular routes, like well-known, and I think you'll get quite a few people here on a busy weekend. But then there's routes in the book, like Little Clenchy.
Oh, yeah.
I would say, you know, I think you can ride there in August and you'll have the place for yourself, which is a nice thing.
Nice, there's a good mix there. And I think looking through the book, it's got, a lot of routes in that kind of mid-range that are kind of a good challenge, but, you know, they're perfectly doable in a day.
Yeah.
And, you know, a few easy ones for people who are looking for that sort of thing. And then, three or four kind of longer ones that you might even split up into 2 days if you...
Yeah, totally. I mean, even this route, you could, you know, you can easily do this as an overnighter.
Yeah.
I think there has been a big shift in bikepacking, adventure cycling, or whatever label you want to stick on it. I'm not too fussed about what you call it, actually.
Yeah.
Is that it's become more popular. There's more people getting into it.
Mm-hmm.
And that also means that, you know, I think when I started bikepacking in 2014, my first race was the Highland Trail 550, which is amazing, but it is probably on the most difficult end of the scale what you can do.
Yeah.
And I guess it's, I think my general interest is getting more people on bikes and giving them the tools to do that so they can enjoy all of those things.
Yeah.
And don't need to be super fit and don't need to have the top-notch equipment. And I guess that's where the book slots in quite nicely. Mm-hmm. It's stuff you can write spontaneously and just have a good time and don't need to be super equipped.
Yeah.
I mean, the challenging routes in the book, they are what they're called, challenging.
Mm. Yeah. Like, yeah, there's some serious ones there, but yeah. Like you say, you've concentrated mostly on these.
Yeah.
Yeah, you've lived in Scotland quite a while, but you've cycled, well, obviously you've cycled around the world on the single speed.
Yeah.
And you've cycled in lots of other countries as well. How does Scotland compare to elsewhere in the world for cycling?
I think if you sum it all, I do think it is one of the best countries in the world to cycle. Like, and that sounds quite steep, but so there's a couple of reasons. Climate is great. Like, you can ride your bike in Scotland all year round. There's no extremes. And I think the one extreme I experienced quite a lot on the round the world trip was heat.
Ah, right.
So, and this is where Scotland's quiet because, you know, temperatures are pretty moderate.
Yeah.
And yes, we get the odd cold day in winter, but also not that often. So then people are super friendly here. Mm. It's one of the reasons why I came to Scotland, because I really, really enjoyed the hospitality I had when I first did biking trips here, and just friendly people. You know, you can come to a pub, you sit on the bar, and there will be someone walking up talking to you. Yeah. And that's just a nice thing to have. So that was one of the reasons. And I think overall, there's a really good infrastructure. So the access rights are another good reason.
Yeah.
It's pretty much like Scandinavian countries. So you can, you know, as long as you do it responsible. And I would argue that the majority of people who do those activities, they have a connection to nature. Like they, you know, I do think they treat the places they're traveling to in a way that doesn't harm them. And I think this is the kind of nice thing with the access rights. Like you can do those trips here. You don't, you know, you don't have to ask for permission. So that's a good thing. And yeah, it's just like, and the history as well. Like I was born in Germany.
Yeah.
And Germany, it does have a lot of historical roots as well. But the problem in Germany is like, it's a country with 82 million people. So like a lot of those ancient routes are tarmacked over.
Ah, right.
Whereas you still have, I've just been out on the weekend on an old military road. And you still got this in Scotland. And I think this is the kind of thing, there's some really interesting routes you can take, which have been here for hundreds of years.
Yeah.
Like, and I think that makes it quite special to be able to do that.
It's always nice when you're on the military roads and things, and there's some of that history still there, you know, an old bridge or even the culverts and things like that that would have been built by Wade or Coalfield. And yeah, it's a bit of a connection to the past, isn't it?
Yeah. So I remember this part of the route because when I did the skeleton for the book, it was some clouds in the background. This would have been an amazing cover picture. But I was by myself, so it was quite tricky to shoot it.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those days today. Blue sky and a few fluffy clouds over the Cairngorms.
Yeah.
It's stunning. And a nice dry track that might not always be dry by the looks of it.
No, but even in November, it was reasonably okay to ride, actually. Yeah.
You're working on another volume for elsewhere in the country at the minute. So.
Yeah.
And are you focusing, it's kind of Loch Lomond and the Trossachs, is it the kind of national park link there that's instigated that one?
Yeah. So I guess the idea for this book and the next one to come is to use, I guess national parks have a natural attraction. The reason why they became a national park in the first instance. But then also tag in an area along, in this case it was Perthshire, in case of the other book it's Argyll, which is probably not that well known for people to ride bikes.
Uh-huh.
And yeah, combining the two. And
yeah, so you're adding on an area where people might not always go on the bikes.
Yeah, so yeah, the idea is to use a national park. And I guess, I mean, for me, national parks are areas where people can experience nature in a, yeah, kind of in a less, it's quite tricky. I mean, it's a national park for, you know, for people, like for protect the environment. But also, I think another role of national parks is to educate people about those environments. So, and I think cycling is a good way of doing that.
So the other thing I was going to ask you about is your event that you run down where you've got your house. So has that already been this year?
Yeah, the Caterham Dirt Dash. Yeah, that was last weekend.
Last weekend.
Yeah.
So how many people kind of take part in that, and what's it involve?
So it's about 70 people this year. It's slightly more than last year. It's basically a two-day bikepacking event. And it... So 2 days, people ride a set route. There's a campsite in the middle of Clenchy, with food provided. So we've got dinner and breakfast. And yeah, it's just a really nice... So what I love about the Dirt Dash is it's a sociable experience. So I think one very important part for me about cycling is that it's a wonderful way to connect people. And I think, like, when people think about bikepacking, there's people like me, I like going out by myself and pretty confident in doing that. But then there's also other people who possibly don't want to do that. They quite like the social aspect of cycling. And that's exactly what the event's aiming for. It's just kind of like people riding the same route. So they can choose to do their own thing. Or to ride in a group, or they possibly ride with people they've never met in their life beforehand.
Right. And it's definitely more of a kind of challenging social ride rather than a race as such.
It's not about racing at all. Yeah, it's not about timing. Yeah. If people choose to ride it fast, that's fine. Like, it's, you know, there's no strict rules as such.
Yeah.
But most people do it because, and the thing I did this year, and I think this is what's very important for me as well, is I want people to understand a little bit more about the areas they're cycling through. It's like, it's all fine and well having a nice bike ride, but I also think it's even better if you know the places you're going through, you know the history, the cultural heritage, because especially in this neck of Scotland, there's some amazing stuff here.
Uh-huh.
And that's what the Dirt Dash did this year. So I marked 38 spots along the route, on the route beforehand, with all the information, like with historical information, so when people did ride, they could go to those places. And there's some, so Caterham Dirt Dash, to give you some examples, there's stone circles, there's old roundhouses, there's some pretty significant churches along the way, and all that sort of stuff. So I kind of think, like, It's a challenging ride, but it's also, there's enough time for people to stop and look and listen.
Yeah, take that information and appreciate it where and, they are. Yeah.
Yeah, and I think it's that. So the way, what I will do when I do those rides, like especially like some of the old Trovers routes, I'm just trying to put myself into the shoes of those people 300 years ago who were driving cattle across those possibly sometimes quite steep hillsides.
Yeah.
And just kind of get a sense for how that could have felt. And I think it all, like, what it does for me, it puts modern life in perspective.
Yeah.
I do think, like, you know, there's, I think if you look, if you look at the overall pictures, like, we're riding bikes which have gears, which are pretty lightweight.
Yeah.
You know, 50 years ago, people, this would have been slightly harder on a rigid steel bike with no gears.
Uh-huh.
So I just kind of think, like, putting those things in perspective possibly also reminds you every now and then that, yeah, it's a different life, but, you know, I think we've got it pretty good overall, I think.
What do you think about, I mean, gravel riding's really kind of taken off as a term in recent years, isn't it? It's similar to what we would have done in the past, maybe, but what do you think's made it kind of such a popular pastime now? Why is it kind of taken off like that?
I think it's been around for a long, long time. So I do think, I guess if you look at, I think the term gravel riding as such is possibly coined around 2013, 2014. For me, it's what I love about it. It's such a universal form of cycling. So it's about the only cycling discipline as such you can enjoy riding from your front door. Because you can ride some technical off-road trails, and you can also enjoy roads.
So
I think that's what it sets it apart a little bit from mountain biking. But then there's also the part of me that thinks it is nothing new.
No one
invented gravel cycling in 2013. I mean, it's just like, I think we've got more bikes now which are much more capable of doing that sort of riding. But if you, I think a good example is the Ruffstar Fellowship. Or if you go back 100 years to the CTC journals.
Yeah.
I mean, they were basically gravel riding. Like,
there was no tarmac
on the roads back then.
Yeah.
And they did nothing different to what we do at the moment. Like, I've seen a talk from George Berwick.
Yeah.
And he was showing pictures of him in the 80s going up to a boffy with a door on his bike. And, like, you know, and he did it on a fixed gear. Like, it's kind of like, but I guess, so you could be cynical about it and say, look, it's just another marketing invention.
Yeah.
But I don't think, I think it would also be unfair to say that, because it has created a whole new segment of bikes, which have become super popular in the last couple of years.
Yeah.
I am still a mountain biker at heart. But within that time, so I really cut my teeth into cycling in New Zealand, and most of the cycling I did in New Zealand was on a full-size bike with a backpack.
Oh yeah.
And like proper off-country cycling.
Yeah.
And then when I came to Scotland, initially I did loads and loads of long distance rides on a road bike, because I was fascinated by it was pretty much outaxing most of the time.
Yeah.
And then I switched back to mountain bikes, and then at some stage I discovered travel bikes, and it's just like it keeps coming and going. They're just universal and super flexible bikes, and that's just, I think this is that is why they're so popular. And now there's gravel racing. That's the kind of thing. I mean, what always happens with those sort of things is, like, it's the same that happened with mountain biking. It starts off and then it diversifies into very, very different. I mean, there's gravel bikes now with suspension and wide tires, which are kind of very close to a mountain bike.
Just in narrower tires almost.
You could also argue that any road bike these days that comes with a pretty wide tire clearance, you could ride that off-road. Like, just stick some really, really
knobbly tires on
and it's fine. Hi there.
Nice.
I guess one thing that does set it apart, and I think this is something I consider as a route planner, is the gearing.
Yeah.
So it's a sliding scale, but then if you look, like, I guess your average gravel bike is not geared for going up 20% off road.
Right.
So that's where the mountain bike kicks in.
Yeah.
From a geometry point of view as well. So I think that's the kind of thing. So and then there's also, I do think, so there's something to be said. So I think there's this old argument, like, I think naturally people will challenge bikes to ride in whatever conditions. But to be honest, there are some routes in Scotland which are so much more fun on a mountain bike. Like the first route I've designed for bikepacking in Scotland, the Capital Trail.
Yeah.
You can totally ride that on a gravel bike if you want to. If you want to really, really enjoy it, ride a mountain bike, because that's been designed. It's been designed for fat tires and But if you challenge your if you want to challenge your technical ability on the bike, it's nice to ride a difficult mountain bike trail.
Like I say, I've always kind of used the mountain bike and done that kind of cross-country gravel stuff on this, but it just slows you down on the tarmac a little bit, doesn't it, compared to that.
So, yeah. But I think in general, and it's interesting that the documentary I did about gravel cycling for the first book I did, Great British Gravel Rides, like I really did not want to tell people what kind of bike they want to should take.
Yeah.
Because I do think it's like any bike can be a gravel bike. There were people on full size mountain bikes. I rode a 1970s Phil Butler single speed. And that is all in one book. So it's just kind of like, I'm a big fan of making cycling more inclusive and not trying to put too many people in too many corners and niches. So.
So, yeah, we were just talking about kind of what people are out to achieve and saying not everybody's going to ride around the world on a single-speed bike or anything like that. But
No.
How can they kind of fit biking into their lives? What's important in that sense?
I think, so a couple of general, I think it's quite generic advice. Start small, make it bigger. So don't over, like, I think if you overdo something, it's possibly likely to put you off for a long time. So if you've never camped, you know, don't go on a 10-day camping trip having never slept in a tent. It might go well, but it might also, you know, turn you off for the rest of your life. So choose kind of whatever. I think it's hard to put a measurement on it. Choose whatever you think is appropriate to start off with.
Yeah.
You can always do more. Like, you know, that's a possibility. I also do think so. I think about the thing for me is cycling is like I made it a habit in some shape or form. Because cycling is actually quite a universal thing. Like, you know, you can do it as a recreational activity, but it also gets you to places.
Yeah.
It gets you around town. So, you know, if you can commute to work. Some of the best adventures I had cycling. Was cycling. I used to work in Stirling and I commuted from Edinburgh to Stirling. Oh, wow. And I had some amazing rides. So it was interesting because I like actually when I did that, there was absolutely no need to look for a big adventure on the weekend. I had my fair dose of cycling during the week.
Yeah.
So I could actually do things on the weekend which were non-cycling related. like I think bike rides is again probably like with any sport. I don't think you need to buy like top-notch equipment if you've never sat on a bike beforehand. Mm-hmm. But I do think if you buy something, look at stuff which can be repaired, which can be upgraded. So like, you know, don't buy something which is like if you use it heavily, a year down the line is going to be no more suitable. So and I think that message is becoming much, much more important. So for the stuff I'm using, I'm deliberately looking at stuff now. If it's clothing, can it be repaired?
Yeah.
Is there stuff which can be done? My bikepacking bags, for example, they've been through various repairs. They are used a lot of times.
I know. We were talking about my bag when we set off, which I sewed up last night from Edinburgh Bike Corp about, I don't know, 15, 20 years ago I bought this. So.
Yeah.
Still going just about strong apart from the big hole I discovered last night.
It's
important and it reduces the cost for people as well.
You
don't have to have top gear for everything.
And then the other way, I think big advice, treat yourself. So I do think cycling just for the sake of cycling is possibly at times very tricky, especially if you add in the Scottish weather, which can be quite fickle at times. But you know, if you've cycled 20 kilometers and you then have a coffee and cake, that's a pretty cool thing. I do think, you know, for someone like me, who's done a lot of cycling, who's got a certain public profile, like we do have a responsibility to encourage more people to cycling. I think for me, that's a given.
Yeah. What angle do you come at that from? Is it an environmental approach or health approach? Why do you think it's so important?
I think everything combined, like I think it's From an environmental angle, it's obviously a pretty sustainable activity. It's also, I think I mentioned that beforehand, it's like it's a good way of getting people a little bit closer to nature. Because I think it's really hard to protect something which you don't have a personal relationship to. Mm. Socially, I think if you look at from a health perspective, it's probably even more important. And that's both from a physical and mental health perspective. One of, I think, the best activities for people to switch off and have a break from whatever is happening in everyday life.
Yeah.
You're moving your legs. Like, even if you try not to, you get fit pretty quickly. I mean, this is the kind of thing, there's still a lot of potential for people to cycle in Scotland. Like, we're not at the point where we've got too many people cycling.
No.
So whatever I can do to get more people out on bikes, I will. Yeah, I love this bit here, right?
Fantastic. Thanks, Marcus, for joining me on the ride. That was great fun. Marcus's new book, Gravel Rides, Cairngorms and Perthshire, is published by Vertebrate Publishing and is available now and is well worth a read. Get some great ideas for rides there. You can follow me online, johndavidsonoutdoors.com, and follow my Activate Doors pieces in Highland News and Media titles every week.